Station 51, engine 27, engine 32, truck 105, structure fire. 1700 Lakeview. 1700 Lakeview. Cross Street Gardner. Time 1632.
Okay, so here we are. We're actually recording now, just so you know. This is Bigfoot Show episode number 43.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we've come together sort of in response to something that happened in the past couple of days. Our good friend, and I say good friend, I mean the person we make fun of quite a bit, Melba Ketchum, put out a press release. And so we were trying to figure out, what do we do? Do we have, like, quote unquote, an emergency show, or do we just sort of, I don't know what we do. So anyway, what we did is our good friend Scott. And when I say good friend, I mean good friend Scott got.
You mean that the same way you mean about Melba Ketchum?
No. I mean actual friend.
Okay. Although we do make fun of you when you're not around.
Yes. So. Well, okay. Yes. That goes. Fair enough. That goes without saying. You conducted an interview for us yesterday.
Yeah.
Who did you talk to?
I have no idea. I was drunk out of my gourd. No. Because of the Melba Ketchum release, we thought it was, you know, timely to get a hold of somebody. So I forgot exactly where I saw the guy's name, somewhere online. But his name is Dr. Todd Disotel, Cornell and Harvard educated. And he had, I think, been on Blake's show, the skeptical oriented show.
Oh, okay, good.
And I heard apparently he is a guy who was willing to take alleged Bigfoot DNA samples as long as he knows the relative provenance of the evidence.
Right.
He knows Meldrum. He'll mention that in the interview. And so he was cool enough to do an interview, and we talked for about 40 minutes.
So why don't I go ahead.
He also knows Igor Bortsev. He appeared in a documentary with him 2 years ago, where he was examining the with one of his colleagues. They were doing a sort of two-pronged examination of the alleged Zana skull. And basically told Bortsev, it's human, bugger off. Don't ever darken our doors again with your stupid skull.
Well, Bortsev will factor back into our conversation here after we hear the interview. So what I'm going to do now is I'm going to cut over to the Todd Disotel interview, and then we'll come back and we'll talk about it.
Todd Disotel, is that correct, Todd, the pronunciation?
Yes.
Todd, who is Cornell, Harvard-educated, PhD. He's a professor of anthropology at New York University and knows about this stuff in association with the Melba Ketchum release, which I'm sure 99.9% of our listeners know what we're basically talking about. In other words, they've claimed to have sequenced Bigfoot DNA. So, Todd, I thought a good way to do this was maybe go through the release. It has about 4 or 5 paragraphs. Why don't I read the release, kind of paragraph at a time, and then we can hear from you as far as explaining anything to the layman out there, what it means, and what your thoughts are on it. Does that sound good?
That sounds great.
Okay. All right, Todd. So the release stated this: for immediate release, Bigfoot DNA sequence and upcoming genetic study. 5-year genome study yields evidence of Homo sapiens / unknown hominin hybrid species in North America. And then there's a number for a contact thing. It says Dallas, November 24th. A team of scientists can verify that their 5-year-long DNA study, currently under peer review, confirms the existence of a novel hominid hybrid species, commonly called Bigfoot or Sasquatch, living in North America. Researchers' extensive DNA sequencing suggests that the legendary Sasquatch is a human relative that arose approximately 15,000 years ago as a hybrid cross of modern Homo sapiens with an unknown primate species. All right, Todd, your reaction to that?
Well, I mean, my very first reaction is I immediately become suspicious whenever anybody carries out science by press release.
Yes.
Though, as I was spreading this to some of my postdocs and grad students and colleagues and, you know, asking them for their comments,
right.
And I talked about science by press release, I mean, NASA actually sort of did this last week. You know, they say, oh, we have a big finding coming out. We're not going to tell you what it is, but, you know, stay posted.
Right.
So, but to claim that you have a paper under peer review and then yet put out the results more or less violates sort of the standard operating procedures that we operate under in science.
Right.
So it actually puts a very heavy onus on them to get this right, because depending on who's reviewing it and where, you know, most, you know, an article like this is going to have an incredibly high level of scrutiny and skepticism.
Right.
And so it's very likely to possible that it won't make it through peer review, at least in the initial round.
Right.
And in fact, this could actually torpedo it. So yeah. There are rules that journals have about embargoing results and things like that, that if you put out the result, an editor may, in fact, refuse to even review it for peer review if you've already been flogging it out in the popular press and media and things.
Interesting.
So that could actually hurt their possibility of even getting properly reviewed.
Right.
Now, there are a million new journals out there is one of the other problems of varying degrees of quality, let's say.
Right.
Some are actually quite poor, little like for profit.
Mad Magazine, I think, has one now. Doesn't
others are run by people with horses in the race, you know, people who are either skeptics or are believers in certain things. Drug companies have put out sort of semi journals, you know, to push their products. And so, again, without any of the data at all, I'm worried and skeptical right off the bat. This did not follow, you know, sort of the standard procedure. Even really big discoveries, you know, they need to follow the standard procedure so that they can be properly vetted.
Now let me...
otherwise you hit the world of conspiracy. Oh, they're not going to let them publish, et cetera, et cetera. And we'll never see the data.
Well, let me ask you this. If, let's say that in the paper and it seems to follow, you know, the scientific method and you're looking, okay, this looks, what would this study, if it was to pass peer review, let's say hypothetically, if it was to pass and assuming there weren't any political, you know, reasonings invoked, but that they had it right, let's say, would a peer review in something like this require additional bits, let's say, I think it's hair samples we're talking about, perhaps even tissue samples, to verify their findings? Or would certain printouts of like DNA patterning suffice for it to say, yes, this is an unknown primate?
I mean, if these were credible people who have done similar work, say have already published results based on the sequencing, say from hair samples.
Right.
I mean, we do this all the time in our lab. A journal's not going to actually require you to hand over a sample and have it go out and be replicated in another lab. Otherwise, we would never get anything done. So they do have to look at the credibility of the people doing it.
Right.
You know, do they actually have the expertise in this? I mean, I have seen some pretty poor studies where it's clear they messed up.
Yeah.
You know, it's due to contamination or just misinterpretation. And those can actually get published. And then usually there's another article critiquing them. Sometimes there's a little bit of back and forth. So, but on something this big, you would definitely want, you know, another lab to have verified your results.
Right.
I sort of, you know, I've done, you know, I don't know, 24 samples over the last 20 years as favors for colleagues or to help out a show or something. Mm-hmm. And I got standing arrangements with multiple colleagues. You know, if I find something that I'm truly in, you know, wow, this might be it.
Right.
I'm sending out a blind tube and saying, okay, sequence this gene, tell me what you get. And I got colleagues who will do that. They won't if I say, here's Bigfoot hair sample, they won't bother doing it.
It came down on a spaceship.
Yeah, but if I send a colleague a test tube and I say, I really need you to sequence this gene, you know, sometime in the next 2 weeks, could you do it? I got people that would do it. And So for instance, the very original Neanderthal DNA study way back in 1997, Matthias Krings et al., they got their result, very careful analysis, but they also sent a subsample of it to Pennsylvania, to another lab where they were able to verify it. So in ancient DNA studies, the gold standard is to follow all the procedures very rigorously, but also to get external confirmation.
Cool.
Now that sort of ancient DNA studies, you know, like Savante Pabos, have become fairly standard and routinized, that's happens less often. People trust them that, yes, they're in Leipzig, they are able to do this properly. But the very initial study, they had to do, you know, both in Germany and in the United States to have people believe it. And then there was a healthy level of skepticism until more samples were collected and sequenced and the results began to fit together.
Gotcha. Okay, I'm going to continue on with the press release. And with your commentary, it's been great so far. Thanks again for coming on. The next bit of the release reads, the study was conducted by a team of experts in genetics, forensics, imaging, and pathology led by Dr. Melba S. Ketchum of Nacogdoches, Texas. In response to recent interest in the study, Dr. Ketchum can confirm that her team has sequenced 3 complete Sasquatch nuclear genomes and determined the species is a human hybrid. And I'll read this. Her quote from her says, our study has sequenced 20 whole mitochondrial genomes and utilized next-generation sequencing to obtain 3 whole nuclear genomes from purported Sasquatch samples. The genome sequencing shows that Sasquatch mtDNA is identical to modern Homo sapiens, but Sasquatch nuDNA is a novel unknown hominin related to Homo sapiens and other primate species. Our data indicate that the North American Sasquatch is a hybrid species, the result of males of an unknown hominid species crossing with female Homo sapiens. In other words, they're saying, kind of in conjunction with some people have pointed out, like with Native American legends, that, you know, women, Native American women had been dragged into the woods and Sasquatch had their way with them and there was an offspring. It would kind of gel with that if, in fact, it's true. But your comments on that... on that last bit of the release?
Well, my first comments are actually, again, on the data. So they claim 20 whole mitochondrial genomes and 3 whole genomes.
Right.
That's a lot of data. And again, without any mention of the methodology of how they've done that, I'm particularly skeptical of the whole genomes. Mitochondria, we do regularly in our lab. We even do whole mitochondrial genomes. We're starting to apply new technologies where we'll be able to do dozens to hundreds of them at a time. So getting 20 whole mitochondrial genomes isn't surprising. The fact that they're purely modern human isn't surprising. Almost all of the samples I have looked at turned out to be either modern human or something like a bear, a wolf, a coyote, something, you know,
right.
Clearly that makes sense.
Right.
It's these whole nuclear genomes, you know, there's a whole series of new technologies. They're actually quite expensive. They take a lot of effort to do this. To my knowledge, the first whole genome sequenced from hair was only carried out within the last year to year and a half, in which a group sequenced an Australian Aboriginal genome from a 100-year-old lock of hair. So to do a whole genome from hair requires a super level of expertise. And again, did this wear in Texas? I mean, did they work with the Genome Center at Baylor University? I mean, this is not something you do in the lab in the back of your garage.
Right.
And to put these genomes together is a very complex process using what we call a pipeline. The bioinformatic or the computer analysis is also extraordinarily difficult and complicated. And so I really need to see some more demonstration of expertise. Did they do this right? Whatever the source DNA may be, whatever, right. They said it's hair,
okay.
But whatever the sample, is this a credible genome? Is this a genome that could be published and released to the databases so that other people could look at it? And with just this press release, I just don't have enough evidence. I mean, they should really say where it was done, who else was involved, and all of those things.
Yeah.
I'm not trying to cast aspersions at all here, but I'm looking up Dr. Ketchum, and I find no publications in the main database that all scientists in the life sciences use in PubMed at the National Library of Medicine. I cannot find a single publication. This gets back to that credibility I was saying earlier about, you know, if you have a long record, you know, 60, 70 articles in a field, people aren't going to question, you know, your ability to carry out an experiment.
Right.
If you are a complete unknown and you're now claiming a truly amazing breakthrough result, we need more data to be able to interpret that.
Right.
So I suspect the raw data itself and its sort of reconstruction. But then the other part is this talk about it arose 15,000 years ago as a hybrid cross, makes absolutely no sense in the sense that that's well within, you know, fully modern human variation. Modern humans, Native Americans, actually probably were in North America 15,000 years ago. I doubt much earlier, but that's close to where many people estimate, you know, between 12 and 20,000 years ago that they crossed the Bering Straits and entered into North America. So any primates running around North America 15,000 years ago, the only primates are human, unless, again, there is this mystery primate.
Right.
And if it is an ape, and they explicitly say it's not a Neanderthal or Denisovan, the next two closest thing, or an ape, the DNA would be profoundly different from us. If, like many people think, they claim it's an orangutan derivative, on orangutan lineage from Gigantopithecus.
Exactly.
The orangutan lineage last joined with the lineage that ultimately gave rise to us 14 million years ago. It would be extraordinarily different DNA than that. And, you know, the hybridization between something that ancient and us seems very unlikely. So I need to know more about what this so-called mystery primate, where does it fall on the tree? I mean, if they're calling it a primate, it means it does belong to a lineage of primates.
Right.
Does it belong specifically to the human lineage, you know, Neanderthals, Denisovans, modern humans? Does it belong to an orangutan lineage, you know, which again would be very divergent, very different from ours? There's just not enough data. And they said arose approximately 15,000 years ago. That's nothing in an evolutionary, that's an evolutionary blink of the eye.
Right.
And so again, I just need to see some numbers and some data here.
Right.
Because this just makes no sense. Okay. You know, I've told you before, you know, I'm skeptical. I'm a scientist.
As well you should be.
I've helped identify new species, or at least subspecies, of chimpanzees and gorillas. A lot of that initial work was carried out in my laboratory. So I know what's involved in trying to identify an unknown and to place it into its proper context.
Right.
And this story, as laid out in the press release, and again, press releases are notoriously awful, you know, just usually inaccurate, misinterpreted, et cetera. But as it's laid out here, it makes no sense to me whatsoever.
Yeah, there has been, the thing is, and others in that are interested in the field of Sasquatchery, if you will, Dr. Ketchum doesn't have the most sterling reputation. A couple of things come to mind, because she has claimed that she has seen families, that she's actually witnessed families of Sasquattle, if you will, that she felt the some hair on a horse of hers, or at least somebody's horse coat, was braided by theirs. So there is, you know, you're hearing these wild, out of the world stuff. Then obviously one should start wondering about whether or not anything that's being pronounced by her. I mean, it's going to take an extra level of scrutiny to really determine if it has any validity to it. There's also been speculation that because of the Brian Sykes study, which is supposed to, by the end of the year, be publishing results, after he welcomed, you know, I guess any and all, but with some discriminating factors, anyone willing to submit alleged cryptid hair samples.
Yeah, then, I've given him data.
Oh, cool. And anything, do you have any statements about that project? Have you heard anything?
It was, this one was already, I can't remember if it was published or in one of the TV shows. It was one, it was the skull cap from the Himalayas that we sequenced, and it's a mountain goat, a Himalayan goral. So, but it was a famous artifact. I'm trying to remember the exact name of this. This was several years ago.
Oh, was this the one Hillary had?
Yeah.
I thought that had already been determined, perhaps not DNA-wise, but just morphologically when they looked.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't credible from a morphological standpoint to begin with, but, you know, it took us a couple days and a few $100 to do the DNA and actually positively identify it as a Himalayan goral, a particular mountain goat.
Ah, cool. Okay. Yeah, the other thing that has been, we might be behind this is that, knowing that the Sykes report is supposed to be coming out, it could be competition being part of the impetus to want to try to get whatever results she thinks, or they as a group think they have found. And then there's also the possible element, as it mentions in the press release, is that they feel it should be identified as a human or quasi-human, and therefore should be protected. So her motivation, actually, which I actually find honorable, because I'm a no kill advocate personally. If in fact these things exist, I say let's find other means instead of just killing one. She may not want that to be happening. So who knows if it's competition, if it's that? Who knows? Maybe maybe she's bonkers 99% of the time, and they actually have something here.
Yeah, I mean, you know that. Some scientific discoveries have come out of, you know, the sort of heretics, if you will.
Yeah.
But again, you know, the press release talks about 27 years of research in genetics and stuff, you know, completely unpublished as far as I can see. Again, I need to know, I don't want to, you know, cast any aspersions, but I really... need to see some more evidence of her skill sets and the kinds of things she's done in the past. Again, I've dealt with people who, you know, I sequenced their chupacabra, and it's clearly, absolutely a coyote. And then they go off to another lab. They do three more shows. And, you know, they just keep pushing and pushing and pushing when, you know, we have unequivocal genetic data.
Right.
You know, I've held these skulls and teeth and skin and hair in my hand and looked at the photos, and they're coyotes with mange, but they keep showing up on local news all over Texas and other places, you know, from a cop car's, you know, camera or something.
Right.
And they're coyotes with mange.
Right.
And, you know, the same thing with men. I would love to find a Sasquatch or a Bigfoot, you know. And I said
they make great pets, Todd. They're great pets from what I've heard.
Yeah. I said that 15 years ago. Yeah. But, you know, I've worked on many, many a sample, and I have never not had, you know, even an inkling of a result that it wasn't contamination or just some other animal. Well, you know, I've been given fecal samples that are bears. They do indeed go in the woods. you know, and coyote, and I got a javelina once. And so I don't want to say played along. I've actually participated. And, you know, I know many of these people, and I've helped out Jeff Meldrum many of times. I've defended him in print. You know, we don't agree on some of his purported results, but
you're not alone. You know,
I still support him as a person and would even consider him a friend.
Yeah.
And he can send me a sample at any time. But I don't just take samples from anybody, because my mailbox would be full every day of the week. Well, and I do get blind samples mailed to me occasionally, but time and money and, you know, credibility and effort just aren't worth opening up the lab to anybody who claims they have found something. But we have methods to identify stuff. You know, there is wildlife forensics is a real field.
Right.
We do this to help conservation genetics, to make sure people aren't smuggling in, you know, they're claiming it's one species and we can show them Fish and Wildlife that it's another, you know, and that's illegal. It's interesting, her last thing about the rights.
Right.
Just in the last few days, New York State's Department of Environmental Conservation put out an official announcement that they will not put Bigfoot on their endangered list because there's no evidence that it exists, and they're not going to go down that path.
Interesting.
So this was just earlier this week. One of my students showed
me. Maybe that was the impetus behind the
release. Yeah, so I don't know who and what the timeline of the people requesting this was.
Yeah.
But in almost in an aside, Henry Gee, the editor of Nature, one of the preeminent scientific journals in the world, has actually published a 3-episode series, a sci-fi series called the Sigil Trilogy, and it's about the Earth in the past, present, and future, and it's completely populated alongside humans with various cryptids. So he has Yetis and Sasquatches and the Orang Pendek and all sorts of creatures basically came out of hiding, you know, in like 2050. And so it was just very interesting reading this series just for fun, because I had worked on purported samples from like 4 of the cryptid species that he had in his novel series. So cool. It might be an interesting one for you to read over.
Absolutely. Hey, well, back to something we were touching on before, and actually Brian wanted this to be asked during this interview, and I think it is a pertinent question, especially because Brian is on, if in fact these things exist, he's on the pro-kill side, I'm on the no-kill side, and I keep advocating on shows about, look, I think you're just being lazy. If they're there, we can find a way. Let me ask you this. So if you got a hair sample, and you could conclusively determine that this was some type of relic hominid, largely, and I don't even know if you can do this, if you can deduce from a DNA pattern itself, you know, how particularly big it would be, or that, in other words, it most likely fits what people say they have been seeing. Would that in scientific circles be enough for verification?
Well, I would say it's unlikely at the moment we would get size out of a DNA signature.
Okay.
Maybe in 5 years, as we get more human genomes and we discover what all these different genes do, we might be able to get at genes that, you know, give us a size range. We're not there yet. I mean, they can give us simple things like hair color and eye color and, you know, those, but we're not at something like size. But if I had a DNA sequence that clearly wasn't human and yet was primate,
right?
It was, let's say it's found in North America,
right?
It's not human and it is primate. And again, we don't know if these things exist,
right,
which lineage they fall on. You know, is it a hominin? You know, is it a relic Australopithecine? Is it a relic Neanderthaloid? Is it a Gigantopithecus? But the sequence itself would tell us where it falls on the tree.
Gotcha.
And when it last branched off from others. That alone, if it was credible, good sequence, and ideally verified, that alone would say there is a missing species out there that, you know, we don't know about. The exact perfect example is the Denisovans.
Hmm.
We have this one tip of a pinky and a single molar tooth from a cave in Siberia, and an entire genome. We have basically created a whole new branch of the family tree based off the genome, because the molar tooth and the pinky don't tell us anything.
Right.
They just don't have enough morphology in them to give us anything about what these people are.
Right.
We know what their skin color was like. We know what their hair color was likely like. We know things about their immune system and their blood groups and all sorts of things. And yet we have no physical evidence beyond, you know, the tip of a pinky and a single tooth. Hmm. And yet we have put them into a whole new lineage that basically nearly everybody accepts, because the evidence is super strong and irrefutable. And you can't, like, fake, you know, 3 billion bases of, you know, data easily.
Right.
So I think if I had a blood stain or a saliva sample or a hair sample or a bit of bone or something that had DNA in it, you could, I believe, definitively say this is nothing that we know of today. And then that leaves open the speculation of what it is.
Right.
But it makes it possible that it is, you know, a true unknown. And we would be able to say if it was a hominin or not, because
right,
if it is within, so hominins, our lineage split from chimpanzees around 6 or so million years ago, if whatever sequences were gathered fell within that 6 million years, you would call it a hominin.
Right.
If, on the other hand, it looked like it fell on the orangutan lineage, you would call it, you know, a pongene or something like that.
Right.
I mean, we have other taxonomic terminology we could use, but so we could say it's a relic hominin, or it's a relic hominid, or it's a relic pongid, or it's just a relic primate. The DNA sequence alone will place it into its proper location in the tree.
So you could have a general idea. Here's an unknown primate, relic, like you say, a hominin or relic pongid, and you'd have a basic idea of what, maybe not its size, but a basic idea of what it would look like.
If it falls in the pong, you know, the Pongit or Pongene lineage, right, it's going to have some orangutan-like features, most right, likely.
Right.
If it falls in the hominin lineage, it's going to be more like us.
Right.
You got to remember, orangutans, while they can walk on 2 feet, they are not bipeds.
Right.
So, you know, it would either mean bipedalism has arisen multiple times, which is completely possible.
Right.
Or, you know, that it would have to fall more closely into the hominin lineage, where the only known bipeds, you know, amongst the primates, the habitual bipeds, fall within that group in the last 6 or 7 million years.
Gotcha. All right. I'm trying to think of any other questions. You've been very informative, Todd. I thank you so much. Let me just look down on the list of questions that. Well, here's how Sam puts it this way. It says, if I ask him this, if I came to him with a paper and said, hey, this is Bigfoot DNA, how long would it take him to realize I was full of shit? If in fact it wasn't.
Well, so if you gave me the actual sequence, you know, yep, in the paper or on the disc, I could sit, click, clack, and type away for, you know, as many letters of the sequence as you had, instantly search it in the database, and say, you know, that's bacterial DNA, or no, that's human DNA, right, or no, it's primate, but not human. It falls in this lineage. It would take milliseconds.
Okay.
To play sequence in the known database. And they, if even if you claimed, well, it's an unknown primate, still calling it a primate still localizes, it limits what the sequence can look at. Because if it's not primate, then it's going to look like a carnivore, like a deer or something else. So
right,
you would instantly, it would take milliseconds to place that data and see what it looks like. And I mean, when we've done this, it's always been interesting. We get the sequence off our machine, we copy and paste it into GenBank, and you know, we don't know until we hit that button.
Interesting.
And seconds later, GenBank comes up searching all the DNA sequence data collected to date in the world.
Right.
And it says it's a primate, it's human, or it's a goat, you know, and we that's trivial. That's the easy part.
Yeah. What you mentioned that you think maybe in about 5 years such things as size might be deducible from DNA samples. Do you see down the road 10, 15, 20 years, however long, that a very specific morphological view of what a particular unknown animal would look like, will that, is that in your opinion ultimately deducible from DNA?
It might be. So I know my colleagues in forensics are working on this in great depth and detail because they want to know this blood stain or saliva on a cup or semen stain from a rape scene. They want to be able to come up with a description,
right,
of the suspect. And so again, you know, some of the simple things that we've worked out, but if you're going off into mammals in general, it's going to be much more complex.
Right.
But, I mean, you'll probably be able to tell what kind of metabolism it had. So, you know, you sort out the difference between a sloth and a cheetah, right, you know, those kinds of things. And probably there'll be some kind of signatures of quadrupedal versus bipedal. You know, is right, the hair generally long or short? But again, that varies all over the body. So right, that's not terribly helpful. If you look at some primates, they got 8 or 9, you know, a mandrill. You know, there are clearly going to be some markers for bright red skin and bright blue skin, and then right, just gray skin and brown or agouti skin. So you might be able to say, somewhere on the body, there is a, you know, a white spot, but the rest of it's, you know, brown, like you know, your average coyote. So, yeah, I think we will be able to get at some of those things.
Great.
Something like what the teeth are like. Cool. You know, do they have, you know, a large canine or not? So, yeah, we'll be able to get at some of those descriptors in the next 5 to 10 years.
Hey, Todd, I just noticed one other question, if you don't mind. One last one.
Sure. Again,
we've been taping a little over, I believe, 36 minutes now. But this is comes from Sam, who's one of our co-hosts. He wanted to know, currently, how many journals are there that are germane to the publish of alleged DNA or taxon papers?
Oh, a whole lot. I mean, several dozen would take, you know, again, a credible scientist submitting a credible study. Right. There are dozens of journals that, you know, Molecular Phylogenetics and Evolution, most of the anthropological journals, all these places, Molecular Biology and Evolution, Journal of Molecular Evolution, then there's Mammalogy and all of those journals. So there's tons and tons of places one could submit this for publication. I'm a kind of surprised, given the research I do, that if this is indeed out for review, I'm pretty shocked I haven't received it as a possible reviewer.
Gotcha.
Because I get dozens and dozens of primate genetics papers a year to review, including many claiming new species status or subspecies status for a particular, you know, population of primates or something. I get those quite regularly because that's the kind of work I actually do.
Hmm. Well, that's, hey, Todd, thank you so much for coming on and sharing your knowledge and viewpoints. Really appreciate it. And I assume you're rooting for the Giants today.
I grew up in Wisconsin, and I've actually scored tickets. I'm heading out shortly.
Yeah,
in my cheese head and my Rodgers jersey in many layers to watch the game tonight.
Wow, how dangerous is it wearing a cheese head when
there's gonna be? I'll bet you 10,000 of the 50,000 people there will be Packers fans. So.
All right,
and they're not Jets fans, so they're not assholes. They might be misguided Giants fans, but they're not Jets fans.
All right, well, have a good time at the game. And
okay, so again, let me know when this is all put together so I can download it someday.
Absolutely. I think I'm going to guess probably within a few days.
Okay.
I'll let you know. Thanks
Great
again,
pleasure
Todd.
Talking to you.
Take care.
Hey, good night.
As I was listening to this yesterday, I'm the thing that I'm most struck by is that you can listen to the Bigfoot Show now and hear actually useful and intelligent information.
I'm smarter for listening to the interview.
It's definitely,
unquestionably,
a step in the right direction for us.
That's I had no idea what the hell he was talking about. No, he was good. He was very clear.
Oh, he's great.
And it was nice. You know, if anything comes out of this whole shebang, it's nice to know that there's at least one, and I'm obviously there's other scientists who are willing to look at the evidence that it's evolved, if you will, at this point in time, that science, like hardcore science, is listening and looking at the evidence. That's a good step.
Yeah, I completely agree. And before we get too further along here, I want to thank Todd for giving us the time, because I am.
Yeah.
We also need to mention at the end of the interview, he mentions that he's going to see the Packers play the Giants.
And yeah.
We know now how that turned out.
That was unfortunate.
he got his cheese whizzed. But I'm going to say that, you know, I hope he had a good time. And
I hope the interview on the show had nothing to do with the Packers getting creamed.
And, you know, because, well, anyway, I'm not going to get into a football rivalry thing. I'm just happy they lost. So here's the question I want to start with after hearing that. And we can get into the response of the scientific community that has already occurred, that is likely to occur if this information from Melba Ketchum, this paper, ever is released. My biggest question, the one I want to get to first, is why now? why did she release, you know, because all this time we've been hearing the first rule of Fight Club is you don't talk about Fight Club, right? If you've got a paper in review, you don't talk about the paper in review. Well, now, I mean, the paper is purportedly still in review.
Yeah.
But she's dumped everything. She's completely, like, all the cards are on the table now. So why?
Except the actual data.
Well, of course, except for that card.
Yeah.
Every other card is on the table. Why all of a sudden does she have this giant sort of mental mind dump onto the internet, whereas before she wouldn't talk about anything?
Well, we don't know. None of us know her personally, but like in the interview, I mean, it was interesting speculation, as Todd pointed out, just a few days before the interview, there was an announcement in New York that New York was not going to protect Bigfoot as a species because there's no verification that such things exist. That's a possibility. She might have been, you know, the Sykes Project, which is supposed to have a report out by the end of the year, maybe she felt that she wanted to get it out, you know, jump the gun, as it were.
Yeah.
Then who is it? How do you pronounce it? Igor Burtsev?
Burtsev.
Burtsev.
I said
which in Russia means cuckoo. He announced something the day before, so maybe she wanted to clarify. I mean, until we talk to her, we're not going to know, but I think most people agree who look at this rationally, sanely, scientifically, and it was the first thing that Todd mentions in the interview, that science by press release is usually pretty poor science.
Absolutely. And in fact, it's interesting, you know, he says that the response, such as it has been on the internet from people like him, has been exactly the same.
Yeah.
You know, what? This is not how this works.
I thought he was charitable. I mean, he did come across as basically saying, I'm willing to give this a chance. I'm willing to wait to see the data. But from where I sit, it looks kind of iffy, and I think that's that's the consensus.
You know, what was interesting, a thing, and I didn't really get to ask him specifically, because I mean he would just keep talking, which was great, because that means that I talk less. I'm sure most of our viewers or listeners would agree,
especially the viewers.
But he said how many problems. Interesting thing is that if you have someone putting forth a paper, right, with accompanying data, he says that a lot of these, you know, these journals, if they start doing this press release, won't even look at it. So the evidence may in fact be there, but apparently, according to Todd, there's kind of this, if you disrespect the protocol,
right,
there's apparently a pretty good load of journals, or the more, I would guess, the more respected journals probably take that as a red flag scientifically, and then B, that it's such a snub to the protocol that they just nip it in the bud there.
But this is the part that doesn't make any sense to me. This is essentially, to be fair to her, this is what Ketchum has been saying for quite a while.
Right.
I can't talk about it because if I do, I will torpedo the whole thing. I'll ruin this chances, blah, 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 blah. So, okay, and we've given her shit for that. But now here she is actually talking about it. It turns out she was right. So.
Yeah. I don't understand it unless you are deliberately. There's two things have happened. Either, this is the press release has been put out in response to, as it seems, Bortsev prematurely posting stuff on his Facebook page about it, and she's responded to that. Either that is the case, or the only other thing that I can think of is that there was word that it wasn't going to pass peer review, and there was a bit of a race on to get a press release out to do something with it.
Yeah, to get as much, kind of a Biscardi method, if you will. You know, some publicity is better than no publicity.
Yeah.
But I
suspect it simply bought sort of prematurely putting this stuff on his Facebook account. Now, if I were Ketchum, if that is the case, if I were Ketchum, and I'm sure if most other people here were Ketchum, we'd just ignore it. We'd just put a little word on the Facebook page saying, don't listen to him. Part of what he said is right, but I'm sticking to my guns, not talking about it until it's past peer review.
Sam, did you want to say something?
Well, I see a couple of ways that this could be playing out. You know, one of the biggest criticisms that we've had for the longest time now is that the way that they have handled things has been amateurish at best. You know, they've made mistakes in the way that they've handled information and dealing with the public. You know, it's been about as coordinated as a monkey humping a football. And this could be
so beautiful is irrational.
This could be just another example in the long line of screw ups that they've made. I mean, if this is all legitimate and it's all on the up and up, this could just be another foul up on their part. What I think is more likely than that is that this could possibly be an out. They like Paul referenced, they know that it's not going to pass. Igor even said, it was quoted as saying, we waited for a couple of years for the scientific publication by Dr. Melba Ketchum, but scientific magazines refused to publish her manuscript.
Yeah.
Okay, so they could have known for a while now that that there was no hope. And by coming out with it this way, they can use the excuse of saying, oh, well, we had this beautiful paper, but now they're not even going to consider it because we didn't follow their rules. And you know that there's a certain percentage.
Some sort of conspiracy theory around it. Yeah.
And you know there's a certain percentage of people out there that will absolutely eat that up and say, well, of course, you know, science is wrong and science is evil and science is anti-Bigfoot. And so, you know, they're just treating her wrong and they've turned their back on this paper, and she can manage to maintain credibility with that percentage of people without ever putting anything on the table to actually be reviewed.
Well, this is what I said about half a dozen shows ago, that it doesn't actually matter what the paper actually says.
Yeah.
It's what gets posted on the Facebook account that the sycophants will read and say, oh, well, It's obvious this is difficult to find. It's human.
Yeah.
And they'll ignore the actual science. All they'll see is human DNA. Oh, well, that explains everything. They're forest people. We should protect them. They're one of us. Give them voting rights.
Because that is...
I'm all for that.
We didn't get to the entire press release in your interview, Scott, but at the end... It quotes her as saying, genetically, the Sasquatch are a human hybrid with unambiguously modern human maternal ancestry. Government at all levels must recognize them as indigenous people and immediately protect their human and constitutional rights against those who would see in their physical and cultural differences a license to hunt, trap, or kill them.
Yeah, it's not terribly scientific, is it?
Not terribly.
No, and that, again, could have been, you know, who knows exactly her motivation. I mean, and again, you have to look at the history of Melba Ketchum, which was a great Lifetime movie if you saw it. It was really good. But, you know, you look at her business record, which was on the Bigfoot Lunch Club. You know, Sam had posted a link on our backstage Facebook page today, which is really good. I encourage anybody to go to it. It's the Bigfoot Lunch Club, and it talks about kind of the history of Ketchum and also the responses to this press release. But, you know, her business practices, they had, 19 complaints. People wouldn't get stuff done. You know, I mean, what they requested wasn't coming out. These premature things, her glamour shot. just the fact that her main spokesperson is claiming that she's habituated several Sasquatch and she feeds them blueberry bagels on a constant basis. There's just a lot of...
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that. This is getting better.
Yeah, this is
it. Oh, my God.
What? Says, any dumbass knows that Bigfoot prefers the everything bagel.
Seriously. Exactly.
I mean, come on.
I know.
That's salty, so right sweet. There. But, yeah.
So, I mean, that's why, I mean, we were all of it. Anybody who has a third of a brain, or maybe 0.268% of a brain, and knows anything about Melba Ketchum, you know, on the one hand, the odds of this going anywhere as far as being accepted broadly in the scientific community is low. But we do know she has some DNA experience. And like Brian had said on a phone call, I think the other day, you know, hey, every once in a while, you know, crackpots actually do something right and may have the actual proof. But alluding back to Todd's interview, he pointed out that the difficulty of what they claimed in the press release for it to happen and the probable huge amounts of dough that would be required to sequence out these genomes, that also seems like a low probability. So, if I was in Vegas and they had the odds would probably be 500 to 1 that this is going, if not higher, that this was going to lead to some kind of major scientifically accepted breakthrough or classification of a new primate species.
Go ahead, Sam.
I was just going to say, I mean, what I think is unfortunate, and I mean, it kind of touches on what I was just saying. You know, if you go back and you look at cold fusion as a comparison to what we're dealing with now, you know, in 1989 was when Pons and Fleischmann came out with their claim. There are still people today that believe them, and they never recanted their original claim that they had achieved cold fusion. They just moved to France. And you can go onto the internet now and look, and there are blogs and people out there that are touting that Pons and Fleischmann were legit, and that for whatever reason they were suppressed or they were ignored, or the other scientists were jealous or biased or whatever. But the point is, all this time later, that still lives on. And I think that's what's going to happen here is...
Oh, there'll be some, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Already Matthew, Matt Johnson, Dr. Matt Johnson, who always likes to point out, I'm a psychologist. Oh, well, therefore, anything you say must be true. He's already printed something I saw on Facebook today, and he was going on both sides of the issue, but he was basically laying out, in relation to what you guys, I think Paul was talking about earlier, is that, hey, peer review is not always fair and objective. And all these, loopholes, which they're setting up so that they can claim, perhaps, or any individual can claim that Melba actually probably had something legit, but the quote-unquote scientific establishment just wanted to quash it because it was just too bizarre. Which, of course, I think all of us think is complete horseshit.
Totally.
Because if you talk to any, even the most skeptical scientists, and Todd, I would.
No, I think he's a perfect. He's,
who doesn't want this to be true?
He's a perfect example of someone in science who is rightfully quite skeptical of the claims, can't really operate in any other way. Well, look at his background. He's an anthropologist, right? I mean, who wouldn't want this to be true?
Exactly. If the science is robust enough, James Randi will be there for the press for the
and he better have $1 million check with him. That's
and a small
if the science is robust enough, then it's science. You can't you can't say, oh, well, I'm not going to believe it now. It's science. There is a scientific process. The peer review is part of it, and as we've established over the years. With some journals, some stuff gets through a little bit easier than others, but it allows other people to look at the data then. All we've got at the moment is a press release, and you can't look at a press release. You can only look at data.
I was on the Bigfoot forums earlier today talking about something entirely different. And of course now, there's a whole thread going on over there about Operation Persistence, and I'm continuing to answer questions about that on the Bigfoot forums. And in the past couple of days, a couple of people have come over and said, well, now what? Now what do you guys, you ruthless, heartless killers in the TBRC, now you find out they're people. Now what are you going to do? And this one guy on there specifically said, well, a DNA study has been released saying that they're half people. I'm like, well, no.
Well, there's been nothing released.
Well, I'm going to shoot the hairy half, right? I said, no, nothing has been released. I mean, and so you've already got these mouth breathers out there who've completely internalized this thing, and now they're projecting it back out as gospel truth. And literally, not one drop of scientific evidence has been put forward by this woman, just her words.
Yeah,
like I said, you don't have to. You don't have to actually get a peer-reviewed journal. All you've got to do is make sure enough of your sycophants believe what you say, and if your methodology is that these are people and forest giants and we should protect them, then you've got a whole crowd of people queuing up behind you to support you.
You know, Janice Carter is a perfect example of that. And in some ways, Melba Ketchum is like Janice Carter on steroids, or the situation is anyways. I mean, no matter how many times that story was just torn to shreds, no matter how many contradictions and just verifiable lies and falsehoods and everything that came out, no matter what got put out there as fact, as irrefutable fact, there were still people that defended her, and there were still people that clung on to that mythology, which is generous.
Well, herein lies another problem. Janice Carter, of course, her story was bought into hook, line, and sinker by Igor Bortsev, who you remember him killing the fake deer on the National Geographic show about Janice Carter. He absolutely bought into that story, hook, line, and sinker.
Yeah.
And here he is, obviously he's on the inside of this Ketchum project, or he wouldn't have had the information he had to release. Now, here's a guy who persists now. He never used to, but he now refers to himself as Dr. Igor Bortsev, even though he doesn't have qualifications to call himself a doctor. He claims he does, but actually the Russian qualifications that he have is the roughly the equivalent of a master's degree. It is not a doctorate of in any way, shape, or form. And yet he calls himself doctor. Now, I picked up on this months and months ago, challenged him on it. I explained to him what his qualification was and why you cannot call yourself a doctor in the United States or in Europe. And in fact, you don't call yourself a doctor in Russia either. It's a similar qualification, but it is not the same qualification. And here he is now, all of a sudden, calling himself Dr. Igor Bortsev, and Ketchum is referring to him as Dr. Igor Bortsev. Now, if her scientific process can't tell the difference between a fake doctor and a real doctor, how the hell is she supposed to analyze DNA?
Well, she probably doesn't have his DNA sample.
Yeah. Hey, I would like to
That'd be a great way to start a rumor, though, to say that she did.
Yeah. As far as the kill, no kill, as listeners know, I am on the no kill side of the argument. But and I do like that aspect of anybody who proposes that. But I don't like anybody proposing it using what is either a intentional falsehood or shoddy science. And that very well could be the case in this case, is that it might be mainly inspired by what they would perceive as threats to these beings, whether they be human, half human, whatever. They're living beings, damn it. Anyway, and another thing I wanted to just to point out about and it, back to Todd's interview is that it was interesting, I thought, because he has access to what's called the gen bank, right, where all the DNA patterns are. And you've got this DNA sample and however they put it in. And he says literally within milliseconds, they'll know if it matches a known animal and more specifically primate. And then he broke it down how, well, we should be able to determine which branch in our history, you know, if it was hominin or whether it was pongid. And there was another one. I forgot which one he mentioned. But I think I don't exactly know where I'm going with this, but it's that the difficult.
I'm not helping you.
No, I know what it is.
You're on your own, man.
It's something Paul said, and that is, look, if the proof is there, it's there. Todd was saying, look, you can't fake this stuff. There's literally millions of configurations dealing with the DNA, and if they've got this sample and it comes out with all these different, you know, the pattern is that way, and, oh, okay, this is not in the databank. It doesn't match any known primate, but it is a primate. And it looks like it's off the hominin or whatever line. You've got something. And if you can't see that, then you're gone. You don't even understand science or anything. You're not, maybe you don't even speak English or you have no sense of logic. But the motivation of those who want to put forth a conspiracy theory of any sort, it's just so weak. I think it's a cool idea. That there could be something like these things out there. And if the science is there, the vast majority of science will recognize it, and then it will be established. But apparently, it doesn't look like that's happened yet.
Well, and the thing, and there was another link that, that Sam put out there for the Bigfoot Lunch Club today that, that sort of was a recap of things that have been, are on the internet today of people in this field, you know, in the DNA field, in the primatology field. And of course, many of them are like not completely dismissing this, but of course you've got to play by the proper rules. You've got to do this the right way. And they have some serious questions. And I think what the interview with Todd and this other stuff that's coming up on the internet is that regardless of what Melba has, if you think that just because she's going to put it out there and say that it's one thing, the chances of that being accepted are extraordinarily low because of who she is, because she has no background and no track record and probably not even the equipment necessary to do the work that she says she's done. There's going to be a lot of very serious questions that are asked about this.
Well, my question, but if she, okay, she's got all this Looney Tune baggage going for, which is, it seems like a fair assessment, like her apparent Looney Tune baggage. But if there's whatever the patterns that she comes forth with, is it then possible? I guess the only other thing is that if it's contaminated somehow, it would give some type of false pattern. That's what I gleaned from the interview with him. So,
as an aside, you could have a sample. If you bring a sample forward, you need to have, one of the things that we've learned in the TBRC is you need to collect a sample of all of the people who have handled that sample. Because if in the course of the analysis it looks human, you need to be able to provide a sample of someone who's handled that to rule them out, to screen them out, right? Well, we don't know where half of this crap came from, right? Or who handled it or where it was or under what conditions. So for her to say, oh, I found human DNA, these things are clearly human. Well, you need to show us that you've done the due diligence to rule out contamination from the people who handled, collected, and God knows where this came from, right? If you can't show that, then what are you seeing? Go ahead.
I was going to say, what if it turns out to be O.J. Simpson's DNA?
Then it's come full circle, my friend.
Wow, that would be the weirdest.
What was the dude's name? The guy that lived in the house?
Cato
Caitlin. Cato, can we Cato back into the popular culture? We need to revive his career.
Well, I thought Todd pointed out a couple of things that were very obvious to him, red flags. I mean, he specifically zoned in on the 15,000 year claim.
My favorite part, Richard said, this just doesn't make any sense to me.
And, you know, the part about how it's just recently they've become successful with extracting so much information from hair and how expensive that process is. I mean, he clearly was someone who could look at this and say, okay, these are issues. These are problems. And not to say that this discounts it and this completely throws it out, but that just adds to the mountain that you have to climb of refuting all of these concerns and these issues. And unfortunately, I think the fact that, you know, the fact that he referenced who she was as being a stumbling block to getting this accepted, that's just going to be one more excuse and one more cop-out that's thrown out there when this doesn't amount to anything. People are going to say, oh, well, you know, these academians in their white halls with their, their high horses, they just wouldn't pay attention to her because she wasn't one of them. You know, she wasn't part of the established group that they listened to.
And I think that there might be some validity to that in certain certain fields of science, right? If you're an amateur astronomy guy, right? If you're just in your backyard with a telescope, you can make a discovery.
Yes.
That is easily either repeatable or certifiable by people who have the real equipment, the real guys, right? This is one of these things where you need to have the proper training and the proper equipment to do the work that you say you're doing. And if you don't, and if you can't answer the questions, again, I forget where I saw it, but one of these guys, a person who has some experience with DNA, has a series of questions for her. And these are all very specific questions. And if you can't answer them, that is the way that they do their work.
Be Dr. Cockjohn.
Yeah. Oh,
professor
yes,
of microbiology yes. at Midwestern University.
Yes, he has some very specific questions. And one of them
I wonder if it's tough for him to get a DNA sample.
yeah.
But of course, I got to be the one to say his name, though.
Yeah. Well, but of course, none of these questions will be answered because she'll now go back to not talking about Fight Club.
Right.
Yeah. Because now, what about the angel DNA aspect, Brian? Did you read that little thing there?
Where did you see that?
Here it is. It's on the Bigfoot Lunch Club. It's Robert Lindsay. I've heard that name before.
Oh, God, Robert Lindsay. What did he say?
Okay, but he says, it says, Robert Lindsay continues to mention how one of his sources told him that the original research manuscript referenced, quote, angel DNA. And here's a bit of the quote. It says, original Ketchum paper mentioned, quote, angel DNA. A source tells me that Wally Hursom, that's the guy who bankrolled Moneymaker for a while, has discussed the initial version of Ketchum's paper. According to Hursom, the paper is very well written, but its conclusions are hard to take. In the papers, he reportedly refers to this as angel DNA, that there's some...
Angel? She's not using that
But they don't know. He says here, Lindsay is saying, whether she is trying to say that it is from angels literally or whether this is her way of saying that it's from outer space, I don't know. But again, just if in fact that's true, that she used that terminology, it's some kind of unknown other DNA, that's another thing where you're adding on to, you know, Melba Ketchum's credibility going in.
What's interesting is I'm trying to find it right now, but someone who I know posted something that was on Bortsev's website, and the translation of it. Oh, here it is. There's a translation here that actually references alien DNA, and so I didn't want to bring it up because I wasn't sure if that was just a problem with the Google translation and it wasn't actually alien, or if that's what he meant to say.
But I believe it's Alieninsky.
Hold on, I'll find it right here. Harry, we're aliens, it says.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, it's just...
And this is a translation, so I'm not sure if this is exactly what it said. I do not rule out the assumption, which seems absolutely fantastic. If hybridization could participate, aliens have visited Earth... It's too unusual DNA found in the samples. I'm not sure what he's saying here because this is a Google Translate, but he does basically say that potentially she's showing us proof here that Bigfoot were also aliens, which is kind of scary.
I think there is actually a mathematical equation going around campuses today, and it's basically this: Melbum plus Bortsev equals.
I've been racking my brains trying to think why you would have Bortsev involved in this. Yeah. Now, I quite like Bortsev. He's a nice guy, but he's a bit old. He's losing his marbles. He's not an academic.
Is he the same age as Bayanov?
Yeah, he must be well into his 70s.
Yeah, because when I saw him in Willow Creek in 2003, that dude was getting up there.
Yeah. The only thing I can think of, I mean, the head of the International Center of Hominology, it's basically a broom cupboard that he shares with Bayanov. And it's their email address is a publishing house. They're basically booksellers, as a lot of these Russian hominologies types are. I suspect that his involvement in this is to get the paper published in a dodgy Russian scientific journal and not an American or European one.
Did you guys ever see the dodgy Russians play live back in the 80s?
They were good.
They were awesome.
They were good skaters, but...
Surely there'd have been dodgy Soviets in the 80s.
He did say somebody on the BFF, I wish I could credit the person who got this, but someone on the BFF sent Igor an email asking... where the paper would be published, and he said it is supposed to be published in a Russian scientific journal issued in both versions, Russian and English, and online. When it will be close to issue, we shall inform the public how to get it now. So,
oh, well, there you go.
It could be the fact, it could be the case that she knows now. The reason, this goes back to the why now, maybe it's not going to be published in the U.S. at all. And it's going to be published in Russia instead. So now she has nothing to lose by going out there on a limb and saying whatever she wants to say, because she's already been shot down and she's frustrated and can't go any further. So now she's hooking up with the Russians. And, they did put a dog in orbit once, but that was a long time ago, and I'm not sure what they've done since then.
I heard it might be published in Uranus. On rather Uranus, not in Uranus, although it's, that's probably the quality of the actual
being
science.
Released from Uranus is what's going to happen.
Well, you know, if you
bear in mind, NASA can't launch anything at the moment without Russian rockets, so
that's
we should
right.
we
that's
shouldn't
right.
maybe there's a connection there
offhand, should we?
Well, you know, if you look at the if you look at the getting peer reviewed and published process as like buying a car, you can almost kind of see how this thing has played out. You know, you go out to buy a car. And you want to get the best car that you can get. And so, you know, you go to the BMW dealership or you go to the Mercedes dealership, which would be Nature or, you know, some similar peer-reviewed journal, and they turn you down. You know, you don't earn enough or your credit's not good enough. And so, okay, we can't get published in Nature. So now we're going to go to, you know, the Ford dealership. And, you know, that level of journal, they turn you down. You know, your science isn't good enough. Your credit's still not good enough. So finally, you end up in this used car lot run by this Russian guy. Exactly. Selling third-hand Yugos. And it's the kind of car that has the little keypad in it where every week you have to come in and make a payment.
No credit, no problem.
They give you the code to operate the car for another week because your credit sucks so bad.
No DNA, no problem.
No problem.
It's
okay. If you look at it that way, it makes perfect sense that somebody like Borstev would be brought in because he might be the only chance they have at this point of getting it printed on something other than
interesting.
And then she's at least published, right? And then it turns into one of these like sort of shady things that you know, and no disrespect to them, but you hear these things that are published in either like a Chinese manuscript or a Russian one, and you're never quite sure if this is legitimate or not. But the guys can say, "Well, I was published in this," you know, it's like so. Well, then it turns into this thing, as we've been saying, where a mythology builds around it, that it was, you know, rejected by all
Western science.
Exactly. Rejected by Western science.
It's like
dude,
being an
Maxim turned him down.
It's like saying that you're a published author because you published your own book. It just doesn't count.
Right.
You know, you can't go out there and say, "Oh, well, I'm a published author." Well, you know, who published you? Ebooks. You know, it just that doesn't work at all.
It's too bad Argosy's not around anymore. They would have done it.
Yeah, of course. What did they have on the cover once?
I did that just for you, Scott.
Bob Gimlin in an Indian outfit. That's credible. Anyway, the name of the show should be No Proof, No Problem.
No problem. So have we beat this into the ground enough? I do have some sort of ancillary things I wanted to talk about. And it occurred to me as I was listening to the interview with Todd, this question of what makes something a person, right? This, that she says that she's looking into the DNA, and of course we have, but let's just say that she's right. And let's just stop talking about that. Let's just give her the benefit of the huge, massive sort of giant gravity well of doubt that exists and just say, okay, fine. There's some sort of humanish thing in there. Isn't there, and this is, I asked this on the Facebook page and I got some interesting responses, but what makes something human? What makes something a person? Is it just the DNA or is it what they do? Because what, you know, and you know, people have, well, why do you call them an ape? Why do you call them a wood ape? It's because they act like apes and they live in the woods. And this gets to the reason why, you know, personally, I don't put any stock in this forest people thing because they don't do things people do. There are things that make
us
people.
It also makes it easier to want to kill them, doesn't it?
Stay on topic, Scott.
No, that is the topic.
No, it's not the topic. That is not the topic at all.
Because if it's not a person, then you're not murdering someone.
Do you think it's a person?
I think it might be. I think it might be related, very closely related to us.
Closely related as, say, an orangutan or a chimpanzee or a gorilla?
Well, closer than that, I think it's clear. I think they're more, hominin. That they're closer to us. They probably show more human attributes. But as far as my no kill, hold on. My no kill position though has nothing to do with whether something's human or not. It's just killing anything that's alive. That's probably a sentient being just to prove it exists. That's what. So anybody wondering about my position on that, it's irrelevant whether it's human or not human.
What I'm trying to get at is if you're going to say something is a human. It seems to me that it needs to do things that humans do.
And crossword puzzles, they have been viewed in British Columbia. completing the Vancouver Sun. No, they haven't.
What do these things do?
To me, it's irrelevant. I don't. Who cares? If they're real, they're human-like, just as gorillas are human-like, and they probably share at least 90. If chimpanzees share 99% of our DNA, then these things
Yeah, but so do pigs.
What's that?
So do pigs.
Well, I would say I think pigs. If pigs were not a discovered species, I still think we'd want to kill one just to prove it.
I mean, we've got to bear in mind
unless you eat it.
You've got to bear in mind that us humans are apes.
Yes, exactly.
And you've got to start from that point of view. We are apes.
Right. Yeah. No, I'm not. I don't have any problem with that.
We're naked apes.
We're hairless, naked apes.
Absolutely.
The only thing that distinguishes us from a gorilla or a chimpanzee is our ability to make tools and have culture of some sort.
Well, but then that's been slippery slope. They said we were the only tool using. Now they found orangs that make spears and get fish. We know that chimps
talking about orangutans. We're talking about wood apes, Sasquatch, Bigfoot. These are not things that have fire. They don't create weapons.
No one's ever lighting fires.
Are you telling me you think that it's possible that they're sitting around a campfire somewhere in the woods warming up?
I'm saying they wouldn't need a fire because they're covered in fur. Animals create...
You get lots of stuff from fire besides heat. You can cook your food. It makes your food more nutritious. Yeah. It makes your food safer to eat. There's all kinds of... It keeps other animals away. There's all kinds of reasons to have fire besides that keeps you warm.
But what's the difference?
You know,
Because we create fire, does that make us better?
No, I'm saying it makes us human. And this is what I'm trying to get at. What makes these things human besides the fact that they walk around on 2 feet?
Well, I don't know. And again, I just don't think it matters.
It certainly matters because now you have a woman saying that they're human, and you have a very large percentage of the people who are in this field, Sasquatch enthusiasts, calling them forest people, presuming that they are equal, if not better than us.
This goes back to the issue that you then say it's not related to. And that I think has to do with how we then can treat them. If we call them wood apes and they are not human, it does make it legally and in some people's minds morally easier to do whatever the hell we want with them. Kill them, cage them.
This honestly has nothing to do with that. What I'm trying to get at is if you're going to say it's a person, then it has to do things that people do. We have a definition of what a human is. I totally agree with you. We are all apes. But we're not the same as other apes. What is that difference?
It's almost a philosophical question.
I don't think it is.
But it's just DNA. It's species.
I don't think it's that easy.
You have to look at it scientifically and go, okay, here's the DNA. That's what a Homo sapien is. Here's the DNA of a chimp. That's what it is. They're only 1% apart. That's what makes us human.
I would propose that the difference between us and other apes is what we can do, what we have done. The fact that we have this entire medium that we're on right now, that you can use our big brains to create things like the internet and this way to communicate with each other using sounds.
We can destroy the earth if we so chose.
We absolutely can.
Yeah.
So, but my point is, if you're a gorilla, you're not a person, and there's a reason you're not a person, because you're a gorilla, because gorillas don't do things that we do. They don't have culture. You know, they're not creating fire. They're not adorning their bodies. They're not wearing clothing. Okay. They don't seem to have any sort of like tribal customs. These are all instinctual actions that they perform.
Well, so I don't know about that. Coco seems to be pretty sentient. Coco did a lot of things. She was taught stuff, but then did
That's
things.
That's Coco. I'm talking about gorillas.
Coco is a gorilla.
Yeah, I'm talking about all gorillas. Not one gorilla that was...
Well, one gorilla then shows that gorillas can do it. I'm not saying all gorillas. But my point goes back to this, Brian. Let's say if I concede that difference, then my question still is, so what? What does that mean?
When the woman we're talking about says that they should be a protected culture, a protected people with constitutional rights of all things, then I think that's part of the conversation.
Well,
and when they can read
and understand the Constitution, that's when they get some constitutional rights, isn't it?
They should at least pass a citizenship test.
I agree that's finding Aboriginal tribes, you can find her pretty, or, you know, Native tribes, it would be pretty close. They would still be.
Well, but here's what I'd say about an Aboriginal tribe. will have a society, a culture. They will adorn themselves. They will build weapons. They will go and hunt together. They will create fire. They will build their own homes. They will do things that people do. Bigfoot does not do things that people do.
Which is all a moot point, because none of those things that you're talking about can be defined from the DNA. Unless you're going to make the argument that these are people because it's Homo sapiens DNA, then you don't have Bigfoot DNA. You have Homo sapiens DNA.
I guess that's my point exactly, Sam.
Well, wait a minute.
You can't look at the DNA and say they're good.
And if you're going to make the argument that it's not Homo sapiens DNA, but we still know they're people, then what in the hell are you basing that on? Because you need a lot more evidence other than you're simply claiming these are people.
Well, this is the interesting thing. What Todd didn't say, and I thought maybe he would say, no, that's not even possible. And he didn't say it in the interview, although he said that it was shoddy. But the whole notion, he did not say it was impossible. Because we know that Homo sapiens crossbred with Neanderthals.
Sure.
We know that. It's a fact.
Yeah.
So does that make someone who is a result of it, should they not have the ability to have certain rights? Or I mean, I wouldn't go to the extreme that these folks are talking about, but you see what I'm getting at?
Neanderthal had culture as well. Neanderthal was as close to us as you could get and not be a modern human. They had culture, they had fire, they had tools, they wore clothes, they had ceremonial burial. I mean, they did all the things we did.
And were they still around today, they'd probably have the same rights and responsibilities that we'd have.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And their DNA is still in some people, right?
Yeah, probably in at least one of us.
What?
You know, he kind of did address that, though, because when he addressed the 15,000 year claim, he basically made the case that, you know, 15,000 years ago, you're talking about Native Americans. You're not talking about Homo habilis or Homo erectus or, you know, any of the relic hominids or anything like that. I mean, you're talking about people. 15,000 years ago, people.
But that's assuming because if these things are around, if there are relic hominids, hominoids around, they would have existed back at that time too.
Absolutely.
And so what Ketchum's thing is claiming is that there was some kind of hybridization, but he never said that was impossible.
Well, no, it's not impossible. But my question would be, why are these hybrids 8 feet tall and covered in hair? And why don't they do things that people do? Why would they not have developed the same way as a person, as we did, as Homo sapiens did, or something similar like Neanderthal did?
I think a lot of it has to do with the environment you're in and what you have with it. Let's say if you had a capacity for brain, but you had
then you'd be a gorilla. What I'm saying is, I'm not saying that there could not be some sort of hybridization, because we don't know. So I'm not going to say with any sort of certainty that that's true or not. There's all kinds of interesting stories from the Native American culture, so I'm not going to say I know one way or the other.
Right.
But what I'm saying is, even if that happened, even if she's right, these things did not develop like we did, or like Neanderthal did, or like any other hominid who walked on 2 feet, that had culture, that did all those things that we did. The only thing, and this is the same thing that John Green was saying back in 1973, the only thing that they have in common with us is that they occasionally walk on 2 feet.
They also... The DNA would be remarkably close to ours.
But so would a gorilla. That doesn't mean it's a person. That's what I'm trying to get at.
Yeah, but it's just a vague terminology. I still come back to, so the difference. Then what does that mean? I mean, I agree with you that they are in an extreme. I think these things should be protected simply because they're animals that would obviously feel pain, and we have no right to do anything to them beyond either hunting to eat, because everything's got to kill something else to eat, but any kind of reasoning that would give us as humans the quote unquote legal advantage to do whatever we want, I'm against, because that's what all this reasoning to me seems to go towards. It's like, okay, so what? They can't paint paintings, or they can't do that.
The most sort of cynical and
no, I'm not. I'm trying to understand why you're so adamant about it. I'm adamant about it because I don't want these things killed. And you say you're adamant about it because
I think it's silly to say that they're humans.
You want them killed.
I think there's people out there, and there's a very not so subtle undertone to the people who sort of ascribe to this forest, you know, this peaceful forest giant, the forest people kind of thing. Is there's a very not so subtle undertone that the problem isn't them, the problem is us. This is sort of an anti-human point of view, pro forest guy. They've got it right. They're
it's
living
not anti-human. What's anti-human about it?
Well,
it's anti messing with them.
So if I'm getting what you're saying right, then we shouldn't have the ability to pass any laws at all with respect to them, because or any other
laws protecting them. Yes.
Well, I agree with that.
Okay.
So it why just, I don't? This isn't what I'm trying to get at. Is people who say that they're people,
yeah,
that Bigfoot are people, they have nothing to they have. There's no evidence to say that they are.
Well, again, it gets back to the definition of people. And I mean, I'm not saying that they should be allowed, like, okay, if you had Sasquatch, they have to be able to ride the bus and they have to pay taxes or something that extreme. Obviously, it would be almost like the same. Let's say if you had like extremely retarded humans, they're still humans, right?
But that's different. That's entirely different.
Well, it still has to do with behavior and what an animal can actually do.
A mentally handicapped person is not the same thing as a gorilla. And I'm not going to say, I mean, that's just a bad analogy all the way around.
I didn't say they were.
Those are still people.
Yeah, I know, but it's still what I still keep coming back to. What's the difference? Okay, so what? They're not people. So what? I agree that we shouldn't give them, because they haven't. That's their home on the earth. That's where they live. Whatever you want to call them, whatever name you want to ascribe to them. I just don't want to see attitudes and legislation put forth where it becomes a lot easier to do whatever the hell we want with
them. Neither does anybody.
We paint Nobody and we have that. Culture and we can make bombs. Do you agree with that?
Who on this show or listening to this show wants there to be a Bigfoot hunting season?
Well, you want to kill one to verify it.
That's exactly the same thing, isn't it? Those two things are exactly the same.
Dude, it's a slippery slope.
Hold
on, hold on. Let me just, I know that you want an overall protection. I know you and Paul, if Paul actually believes he exists,
those bloodthirsty killers.
And Sam, I know we all want that. It's what I'm concerned about is that initial phase. If these things exist, that first contact.
Can I ask a stupid question here? What are we worrying about? Nobody's actually going and killing these things at the moment because nobody can bloody find them.
There was a woman on the,
need protection.
There was a person on the Bigfoot forums who asked me this, well, aren't you worried that someone might be going into Area X and trying to hunt a ton of Bigfoot? I'm like, no, because we've been in there for 2 years and we've barely gotten seen hide or hair of them, right? You can go in there with the intention of dragging out like a cordwood set of dead Bigfoot, but that doesn't mean you're going to actually be able to pull that off. So,
you know,
we're likely to do more.
And again, as long as you eat them back there, that's fine.
We're likely to do more harm in trying to protect them in our stupid human way than good.
I think the only reason you protect them, to Scott's point, because I think there is a point in there worth making, the only reason you protect them is to keep people who want to go big game hunting.
Yes. It's the aphrodisiac. And actually.
Yeah. And you want to grind up their penises to make, you know.
No, exactly. Those jackoffs are the ones
if they're human, there's no bones in the penis to grind up.
Well, you grind up the dried up whatever's left over. Sam, I sound like you want to say something, Sam.
No, I was just going to say, I've said it for a long time, and I firmly believe this. A lot of the people who are in the, what I call the anti-discovery camp, you know, the people who say that, you know, we shouldn't be trying to prove these things and we shouldn't be going out there and actually trying to document these things. The reason they say that, these are the same people that are making bullshit claims.
Right.
These are the same people that are saying these things can teleport and, you know, mind speak and, you know,
of course,
do all
problem.
Of these.
Once you identify them as a real animal, then all of that hocus pocus disappears and a lot of your reason for liking this goes with it.
Exactly.
Unless they're half alien angels.
Right.
Wait a minute. Sam, you're saying that the people who say who don't want anything happening to these. Wait, say that again, because I agree there are people like that, but I don't think everybody holds that belief.
No. What I'm specifically talking, I'm not talking about the people who don't think that one should be killed. I mean, I can completely understand that point of view. I don't share it, but I understand and I respect it. What I'm talking about are people who don't even want you to go out there and verify their existence. People that, you know, who make these claims of harassment.
Leave
them alone. Let's just go out there and commune with them and get butt naked and give them blueberry bagels. Those people are what I call the anti-discovery group. those people are that way because I truly believe they have built up such a mythology around these things that encompasses so many fantastical and probably wildly inaccurate claims that if this thing is ever brought in and it's shown to be nothing more than a hominid, a flesh and blood ape, just like the rest of us, that whole world is going to come crashing down. And particularly if they're one of the key people out there making these ridiculous bullshit claims.
And if you are with them physically, not on the internet, but with them physically, and I have been at some of the things that I've been to over the years, they invest so much of themselves in this mythology. The people in Texas, the one year that were showing Meldrum the photos of the mushrooms that the Bigfoot were hiding under, right?
What?
These people...
Where are those mushrooms?
These were really big mushrooms. But they invest so much of themselves in this thing, right? They become what they're... I mean, it really is a huge part of their belief system and of who they are. So if all of a sudden you're talking about going out there, and if, you know, however you do it, whether it gets hit by a semi-truck or you find a tooth or a hand or whatever, once you establish them as just another animal, as we all are, to your point, then all of that evaporates.
I think there's some truth. I just wanted to say one thing about that, and I agree with a point that with what Brian said there and what Green actually said a long time ago in, I think, The Apes Among Us, and that is that the Sasquatch should, I mean, unless it's determined to be endangered, which we don't even know because we don't know enough about them at all, if in fact they exist. But that is that, I mean, I believe that every living thing is on equal standing with every other living thing. No, nothing has, we may be smarter than that, but everything has the equal right to live on this planet. You got to kill stuff to eat and you got to do that to survive. But as soon as you start saying this animal is inherently better than this, I think it's bullshit, and it seems to, I mean, I tend to be a theist, and I believe there's such a thing as a God, or at least a force out there that, you know, everything is on the same, everything's got a right to live, in other words. Well, now,
wanted to add, I mean, before somebody comes out and makes the claim that I'm just defending my own bias, I don't really care what Sasquatch is. I mean, all I care about is knowing the truth. That is my end game. That is what I want. I want the truth.
Sure.
I don't care how it comes in. I don't care how you provide it. All I want is for you to slap it down on the table. No games, no illusions, no teases, nothing. Verifiable. This is what Sasquatch is. Mystery solved.
And then you're going to cry like a little baby going, but I didn't want it killed. You'll then realize. I'm just telling you now. Okay. And then again, if you eat it, it's only the guy who killed it.
But to Scott's point, I'm sorry, to Sam's point, the only thing that anyone in this field, or any field really, not just this field, any field, should be worried about is what is the truth. And if the truth turns out that they're just really quiet people who, for some reason, don't...
Really quiet, hairy people.
Who just sort of hang out naked in the woods and don't do anything that other people do. Then, you know, whatever. And this, again, someone, you know, because these people now are emboldened by what Melba has said. So they're sort of coming out in force. And I got some of this on the BFF, too, about, well, you're just, you know, again, this assumption that what we really want to do is mount a big, hairy head over our fireplace, which is... absolutely not the case. And Scott, I don't think we're that far apart. I would say that your personal opinions about animals notwithstanding, at the end of the day, what I want and what you want is the same thing. These animals should be allowed to live, and they should be protected so that they can keep living, so that they don't have a problem with habitat loss like so many other large mammals do or have had in North America. That's the ultimate goal of this. No matter what they are, no matter what their DNA says or anything else, what I'm trying to get at is just because Melba Ketchum says they're people doesn't make them people. Even if in their DNA you see something that say, well, that sure looks like Homo sapien DNA, that doesn't mean they're people because they don't do things that people do. And I think at the end of the day, my point is what makes people people is what they do, not what is written in their DNA.
But I know I've met a lot of people who act like what apparently Sasquatches act like. They just don't have as much hair. I see your point. I think we agree, literally, much like the DNA between the chimpanzee and the human, 99%. It's just that with the growing interest in this, my hope is that the discovery process, and I think that is something that's cool in and of itself. But I don't think it's all just about knowing the truth. It is, I think the way it is done is equally important for the people involved, because I just think it is on moral grounds that, you know, oh, I see one. I got a bazooka. I'll blast it out. Now I personally just think that's abhorrent.
Well, clearly you need to adhere to local game and fish regulations when you're harvesting your
Sasquatch. And plus, I think there's actually, and we talked about this on a show a long time ago, I think there actually is a law. Isn't there a federal law that basically states that, and yeah, I know you said.
We're going to go down this slippery slope. The point of the matter is no one's going to write you a ticket for bringing in a novel, new, completely unknown to science animal. You're not going to get the game warden knocking on your front door because you shot a hairy thing that was out of season. Well, guess what? It never had a season, and everyone said it was like a unicorn. The same thing. If you bring in a dead unicorn, no one's going to get you for shooting a horse.
Right? I do not agree with that. I think it depends on where you would do it, and you could get a lot of shit. Absolutely, and not just from legal folks, but from those folks you were talking about who are even 10 times more adamant than I am. I'm serious, man. I would watch your back if you ever thought about anybody who listened to this. I thought they'd shoot one and it's just going to be scot-free and everybody's going to love what you did.
No, that's not what I said at all. What I'm saying is you're trying to – this is the same thing that happens on the internet forums and everywhere else. Oh, you're going to break a law. There's going to be you're going to get a ticket. Like, okay, fine, I'll pay the ticket. They're talking about the scientific discovery of last century and this century.
And that's more important.
So get a ticket.
The life of an individual.
Absolutely. Being. Especially when you're talking about the potential thousands of others of them that right now are walking around North America with no protection, nobody trying to preserve their habitat, nothing. So
yeah,
I have to think
like Paul
that,
said, they've done a pretty good job so far of remaining.
We don't know that. How many were there 20 years ago? How many are there today? We have no idea.
Exactly. We don't know.
732.
Exactly. And if you plug one tomorrow,
there'll be one less. Yes.
Yeah, one less. Maybe there's only 200. But that's okay because you got a scientific discovery, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. All right.
Pretty much.
Yay, science.
Science wins. Science wins again.
I think we need to be
suck it, forest people.
You have. This is. I want you to watch. Paul wants to say something.
I
think we need to be rounding them all up and branding them so that we can keep count of them all.
Number 262. Come
now
forward.
That's better than killing.
And we ought to paint targets on their chests. Make it easy.
We'll tag them like livestock. We'll just put a number on their ear and walk around these big yellow tags hanging off the side of their head.
So when I hear, hey, why isn't Brian doing the show today? Well, they're still trying to get that gun out of his ass that was shoved up it in Oklahoma. I should feel empathy.
You wish.
Yeah,
that's
well.
That's the greatest dream.
All right.
Well, I mean, at this rate, they're all going to move to Russia because they're getting east.
We'll go with Melba. She's going to be living in Moscow or the outer limits of Moscow someday.
Just the outer limits.
Where they can braid hair in peace and...
Yeah, that was the other thing.
Hippie communes.
Wasn't that the lady who was her spokesman, I believe, says I don't know if she said she witnessed Sasquatches doing this, but she found
the horse's hair. Yeah, the mane being braided. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Happens all the time.
Kookiness.
Happens all the time.
Because
if it's true, only people are known to do that. That's all I'm saying.
There you go. Well, remember, what was the dude that got carried away in the sleeping bag? He said they had woven mats.
Yeah. See?
So there you go. They obviously are human.
Maybe. I think that it wouldn't surprise me. Seriously. If somebody hit one with a truck tomorrow,
blow me away.
That they are closer to us than even chimps. They could be 99.73%, you know.
If one of them gets run over, then it's a little too close to us.
It's what?
I guess.
Is that British? Something?
Yeah,
was that a British
humor,
joke?
Yeah, it's British humor. All right. Well, we've been going on now for at least an hour.
Yeah, hour 10.
Plus, we had the 40 minutes of Todd. So I'm putting a fork in this one unless someone else has something they want to say.
No, that's long enough to talk about Fight Club.
Yeah. I just want to say in closing how proud I am that we got through all this Igor Borstev talk without anybody making a single Yakov Smirnoff reference.
Wait a minute, you just did.
Well, reference, yes. Joke, no.
No.
And the only thing I'm going to pick you up on Sam, is that Yugo cars come from Yugoslavia, not Russia.
Well, I was just working off of the material that Harriet was throwing my way, so we'll blame it on him.
He went for speed, not quality.
There was a time in my life where I made some fantastic career moves from working at the Middle East Economic Digest just at the start of the Gulf War and finding myself unemployed to moving to the Bank of Credit and Commerce International 2 weeks before they went bust. And then I took the fantastic career move of going to work for Yugo Tours just before the civil war in Yugoslavia. There were people that were sort of looking at my CV and thinking, I'm not going to employ this guy.
I can understand. So you went into business for yourself. All right. Well, that's number 43. All done, right? Going once, going twice.
I got
nothing. Don't kill him.
All right. We're going to go kill some Bigfoot now. We'll see you guys later.
It's people. Soylent Green is made out of people.
Listen to me, Hatcher. You gotta tell them Soylent Green is people!
Silence!